This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I honestly, when I look at the news, I kind of feel like a mountain climber at Mount Everest. It's like everything's got to stand in line, man.
Yeah, I know it's really important. You're going to get to the top of Mount Everest, but stand in line. There's a lot of important stuff going on. We're going to talk a little bit about Justin Amash. We're going to talk about China and their weaponizing of rare earth minerals. We are not in a trade war. We're in a war. And we'll explain that coming up in just a second. Also, the latest on the abortion controversy. Missouri is now going to be, what are they, one day away from not having any abortion clinics in the state. Congratulations, Missouri. Congratulations. At the same time, Georgia is being threatened by Netflix and Hollywood. Well, we're not going to do anything in Georgia. Oh. To get Hollywood to spend money in our state, all we have to do is kill children? Oh, well, that's a tough decision. We start there in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Recent Gallup survey shows Americans are worried more now about burglary than almost any other crime. And I think there's a reason for it. Right now, we're living in a country where everybody's like, that's my stuff. No, I that's my stuff. No, it's not. You don't deserve it. You see did you see the lawsuit going on? I think it's in New York where they systematically demoted white people because they were white and then gave their jobs to other people that were not qualified.
Finally, Martin Luther King's dream has come true.
Exactly. That's what he wanted. That's exactly what he wanted. As Al Sharpton said, it wasn't about a black man in the White House. It was about the same stuff in everybody's house. No, that was not his dream. But anyway, everything is being stolen. Everybody is claiming everything is theirs. When they did an interview recently with a bunch of burglars that were responsible for this really horrible string of burglaries in the town, the burglar said, well, this is our stuff. We deserve it. If you can't keep it, if you haven't even put an alarm system on your house, well, then it's ours and we deserve it more than you do. That's crazy. SimplySafeBeck.com is the best way to secure your home and make sure that no burglar is getting in. And if they do get in, they're caught immediately. It's SimplySafeBeck.com. I want you to do your own homework. You're smart enough to figure this stuff out. And I'm telling you, when you start looking into it, you're going to realize you've been ripped off, if you have a burglary system, by these companies that have been selling you crap for a long time. This is a different way to protect your house. It is SimplySafeBeck.com. You get a free video camera with it right now. It's a security camera when you order. It's a $100 value. You get that free when you order. Now, it's SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. So where do you want to start, Stu, as we're standing on the summit? About to reach the peak of Everest, and it's crowded as we're looking at all of the stories.
They need like a Wendy's or something up there.
Can I tell you something? It's grotesque what it's turned into.
I mean, it's a lot of people want to do it, right? I mean, a lot of people want to say they scaled Everest, and at some point, so many people have scaled Everest, no one wants to say they scaled Everest anymore.
Do you want to scale Everest and stand in line for your photo op? It's like Disney.
It is.
Grotesque.
Well, it's really just a, you know, this is a dumb complication, but basically there's only like a very short time you can actually do it.
Right.
And so they give away, I mean, look, it's Nepal.
I know.
They're like, here, we have one thing. That giant hill over there.
I know.
Charge whatever we can.
Yeah, they're charging $11,000 for the permit to do it, and everybody's paying it.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay.
And this time it was a relatively short period, even shorter than normal, so everyone rushed up there at the same time.
And you know that they're like people are passing dead bodies?
Yeah.
Because you can't get dead bodies down. It's like $70,000 to remove a body from the top of Mount Everest, and people have died. And so they just leave them there. So you're like, hey, I'm going to get my photo op. That's a dead body over there.
Yeah.
Well, just keep it out of the, crop it out of the picture. I mean, it's weird what's happening.
It is. It is. So I don't know that I would start with the Everest thing.
No.
Myself, but
yeah, no.
I think the Missouri thing is significant. Basically, there is a new moment in this abortion conversation that we're having right now. Missouri has implemented some of the most restrictive abortion laws in America. And, you know, obviously this is all going to an eventual Supreme Court challenge of many different parts of Roe versus Wade, but also the entirety of it. But Missouri has one abortion clinic left, and it is Planned Parenthood. And they have been audited at Planned Parenthood. And so Planned Parenthood is they actually did have problems. They went through the entire audit and they found significant issues. Planned Parenthood gave them a plan, and this is how we're going to correct those issues. And the state's like, yeah, well, that doesn't look sufficient. We want to have some interviews with some of the people who work there. And Planned Parenthood is refusing. Think about this. If you are an abortion supporter for a second, you are saying this is this fundamental right and it's all about women's rights. And then Planned Parenthood is saying, yeah, we're not going to let you interview our doctors to keep this clinic open. They're saying, no, you can't interview them. Now, God only knows what would happen if they did interview them, because who knows what shady stuff they've been doing there and what they would admit to under questioning. They may. And that is probably why Planned Parenthood doesn't want them interviewed. But if they don't interview them, the state is saying, well, if you don't go along with the process that we've outlined here, you are going to your license is going to expire and we're not going to renew it. So that expires, I believe, in 1 week.
Can you imagine any other business? You imagine financial sector, car sector, anybody, when the state licenses you and you as a business say, no, you can't interview us. On the license renewal. No, you can't talk to any of us. How dare you even think about talking to us? Everybody would say, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? What are you hiding? You know, and maybe they're not hiding anything. Maybe it's just on principle. But if you're a regulated industry, you imagine the cable company saying to Congress, you know what? We're not showing up.
You have to understand, though, Glenn, there's a fundamental principle of the left that they just don't believe in government regulation.
Really?
They don't want the government in the business of a doctor and patient relationship.
Well,
they want nothing to do with that.
Except for universal health care.
Well, yeah, and every other interaction, including things that you buy over the counter. And they want the FDA to basically block every new medication until the end of time.
Exactly, and they
want to be able to sue every drug manufacturer every time someone has a negative side effect. And sure, they want to do all of those things. And they want to be involved in every aspect of your life from birth to death. But this one thing, they are just basically Ayn Rand on.
Right.
They don't want any government interaction.
Imagine the left if the insurance industry or the drug manufacturing industry said, we're not taking any questions. You can't question us. How dare you even question us? Yeah. Can you imagine what they'd be saying?
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
No, but they have special rights. Planned Parenthood gets special rights because they're a protected political group. And their case is basically they're harassing us. They're coming up with these things, these crazy things that we have to do, and we're not going to go along with them anymore. But again, like, if you're protecting a fundamental human right, like you say you are, surely interviews is not too far, right? That's not too much to ask. They're doing this because I think they think there could be a potential disaster if they get their employees in front of these people questioning who might think a little bit more about themselves and say, look, I'm going to be honest. I don't want to get thrown in jail for lying about any of this. So they may be honest. And that is not what Planned Parenthood wants. It'll be interesting. This would be the first state since Roe versus Wade occurred to have zero abortion clinics in it. They would have zero as of next week.
I have to tell you, this by the Democrats forcing this by taking such an extreme position. They are forcing people that have never thought about it before, never wanted to think about it because it was in that safe, legal and rare category. And people were happy living there. You know, the vast majority, I shouldn't say vast, 50-60% of Americans were happy living there. Safe, rare, legal. It just covered everything for most people in America. And because they got away from safe, rare, and legal to shout your abortion. Abortions are great. My best abortion happened the first abortion to where it was, it's crazy. Yeah. It forced people to go, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. That's life. Oh, now, wait a minute. When does life actually start? And we're having real deep conversations for the very first time. And it may not be happening on the left, but it is happening on the right. And that's why you're seeing states like Missouri say, you know, none, zero, because people are having this. They have played this card because they believe that there is enough Americans who will say, oh, my gosh, look, they're trying to shut down all abortions. I'm going to vote for the people who said, yeah, you can let the child die. After birth, I'm going to vote for them because of these extremists that don't want anything because they say it's life. I'm sorry. I don't think you're going to win. I really don't. I think Americans are fair. They don't want to be involved in your life. They don't. They won't want to be involved in your decisions. They have enough hard decisions to make on their own. I don't know about you, but I'm dealing with my teenage kids, and I don't need to mess with you. Why am I getting involved in your life? My life is enough. I'd like somebody to help me out on mine. I'm looking for some answers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's where most people are. But when you go so far where you're like, yeah, that's not even a kid. What?
Right. I mean, abortion's biggest friend has always been the ability to drown out the thought about it.
Yes.
Right. And so, like, you think about it.
Because people,
like,
don't want to think about
it. Right. Like, you're in an apartment, right? And you hear yelling and fighting in the next apartment through the walls. Uh-huh. Abortion's biggest friend has been America's unending ability to just turn up the music really loud and not hear it. Right. And so, that's going on. You know, so what?
Because of our tolerance. Because we don't want to get involved in somebody else's affairs.
Right. And so, that's your starting point, right? Uh-huh. However, when you hear the plate hit the wall and break, and you hear a giant piece of furniture turn over, and at that point, Americans, all right, I got to turn the music down and listen to this, because what the hell is going on? I got to call the cops.
Yep.
And that is where we are, I think, with abortion.
I think so too.
They have come to the point where they are. You can't ignore it anymore because of the extremes they're going to, and that overall is a good thing. I fear the idea that we're in a debate about the ninth month of pregnancy, because, you know, because
if you lose this,
the Overton window moves.
Yeah,
you lose
this debate. If people go numb on this, we are then killing children. We are the next thing we debate is, you know, their health care is too expensive, so just let them die. I mean, that's what's going to happen, because historically that's what happens. And I think America is drawing the line. I thought about this a lot last night, and I listened to three different speeches. I listened to George Washington's farewell address, Eisenhower's farewell
address. You got
audio
of Washington's? That's amazing.
Yeah, it's actually audio. Somebody else read it, but yes.
I did figure that.
So Washington's farewell address, Eisenhower's farewell address, and Reagan's time for choosing. And I want to work on this a bit for tomorrow's broadcast. But I will tell you that everything that they said is happening now. And everything that they were talking about is 100% reasonable, I believe, to our Democratic neighbors. To those who vote Democrat, they will listen to these words if they are presented in the right way. They will listen to those words and go, yeah, that's true. I agree with that. Absolutely. Mm. And I remember in 2008, you might remember this. We were so freaked out, and I prayed so hard, and I got two answers. One, these are not enemies of yours. They're enemies of mine. Anybody who stands against freedom, basic human freedom, they're not enemies of yours. Those are my rights. I've lent it. You're going to have to fight for them. But those are my rights that I lend to you. So be on my side. I'm not on your side. I'm on the side of rights. Be on my side. That was the first thing. At the same time, I got another message, and that was, their arrogance will be their undoing. don't worry, their arrogance will be their undoing. And that's what we're seeing right now. They are so arrogant. They so believe that they are in the majority because of the media and everything else, that they're not afraid to say anything. And they're saying the craziest damn stuff, and Americans are waking up. More in a second. First, let me pause for 1 minute and tell you about Blinds.com. Big special that they have going on right now. It's the Mega Memorial Day sale. You can save up to 50% on everything site-wide. Plus, you'll save an extra $20 off on top of that if you use the promo code BECK at Blinds.com. They have 30,000 five-star customer reviews. They're America's number one choice for affordable custom window coverings. Plus, every single order gets free samples, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed. So save 50% off of everything, plus an extra $20 off with the promo code BECK. So you just go to blinds.com, use the promo code BECK. If you're looking to transform the look of your house, especially if you're selling it, but don't wait to sell it. Enjoy the house while you have it. But if you're looking to sell it, this is the fastest, cheapest way to transform and update the look of your home. Just go to blinds.com/Beck, blinds.com, use the promo code Beck. You'll save an extra $20 and 50% off site-wide. Their big Memorial Day week sale, it is happening right now. Blinds.com, promo code Beck. 10 seconds, station ID. You know who I've become a big fan of is Bridget Phetasy.
Yeah, she's great.
She is hysterical. Have you seen what she wrote to Alyssa Milano and her, you know, not going to have sex, you know, make sure you don't have sex with your husbands until this is changed? Did you see her tweet back?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
Alyssa, have your husband call me. I love that.
Which actually I think even Alyssa laughed at.
She did.
Yeah,
she actually liked that tweet.
It's kind of fun.
But, you know, we're coming to a place where Bridget Phetasy she's not known as a conservative at all. Mm. She's had a fascinating, fascinating life. And has worked for Playboy magazine. She's very outspoken on sex and everything else, and she has a reason for it. Her life story is incredible. But she has been rejected now. I don't remember the first thing. What was the first thing that happened? But she's been rejected by the left because she is an independent thinker. And I think she's one of those like Dave Rubin who is starting to go, wait a minute, you know, I just kind of always thought I was a liberal, and I'm not for any of that stuff. And she's waking up, and I think there are a lot of people like that. And when I see Netflix come out and say, you know what, if Georgia, if you try to go and do that heartbeat law, well, we're not going to film there. I think there's a lot of people that A, are sick of Hollywood, B, are smart enough to go, wait a minute, we're talking about a baby. So you're asking me to turn a blind eye to killing babies, or you'll give me money, or if I don't turn a blind eye, you'll leave and you won't make your stupid show here. Well, that sounds like a deal with the devil.
Because even if you don't agree on the position on abortion, you obviously don't want a state making its decisions on its laws, especially on something as critical as life,
right,
based on whether, you know, the next season of House of Cards, which, by the way, was starred a guy who was molesting people all over the set, Netflix.
Yeah.
All over the set.
Yeah.
Yeah, you made a lot of money off of that one. Did you donate that money, Netflix? Did you? Because I don't remember the big story about how you donated all that money from all the profits from House of Cards that you made, which basically launched your entire company.
Mm-hmm.
And around a giant party of molestation of at times underaged boys. That whole thing didn't seem to make you make any decisions as far as money goes. Yeah, you changed out the actor actress
on the last season,
and you apparently fired anyone who had any ability to write. Because I don't know what the hell happened in that last season. It was terrible. But I mean,
I don't know. I think they all went to HBO and wrote the ending of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
But that's a different season.
Shouldn't you be making your decisions as a state when it comes to your laws based on what's right and what's wrong? Not based on extortion by Netflix.
For instance, I grew up out west, so this probably never registered on your radar, and you're a little younger than I am. But I remember when the 55... mile an hour speed limit happened. Okay, now back in the east, it probably didn't mean that much because you went from 70 to 55, and quite honestly, in Connecticut and Washington and everything, you're lucky to get to 55. Okay,
right,
on the highway.
Yeah.
But out west, everybody was like, "Are you kidding me? Do you know how long we're going to have to be on the highway to go visit somebody?"
Right.
Because our states are enormous. And the government said, we're going to withhold funds unless you do this. People back then were upset, and some states went, you know what? Screw you. That was over a speed limit thing. This is life. Hold your ground, Georgia, Missouri. Hold your ground.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about Relief Factor. If you're in constant pain, you are not alone, because I was as well. Inflammation is really what is at the root of so much of our pain. And I can relate to you if you get up every morning. And quite honestly, let me just speak frankly to guys, and maybe women don't understand this, but I am with you if you are in so much pain. It is... emasculating, and you have to ask your wife to help you do things that is just, it's horrible. I can relate. There is relief. At least there was for me, and 70% of the people who try this find relief, and it is Relief Factor. I want you to go to relieffactor.com. Try it for 3 weeks. It's $20. Try it for 3 weeks. If it doesn't work, stop taking it. It works for 70% of the people who take it. They go on to order more month after month, just like I do. I've been taking it for over a year, three times a day. A way to ease your pain and get your life back. It's relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. I want to introduce you to an amazing, amazing couple. They have just been named the hottest event keynote speakers of 2018. And that includes, you know, the likes of Mark Cuban and Barbara Cochran and Magic Johnson and everybody else you can think of. They are motivational speakers, I guess, but really the motivation, I think, just comes from the way they live their life. Chris Norton, Emily Norton, author of The 7 Longest Yards. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So anybody who doesn't know you, tell me what The 7 Longest Yards are.
Yeah, so The 7 Longest Yards, it came from this goal that I set. That I'm going to walk Emily 7 yards down the aisle of our wedding side by side, which, you know, listening, you probably think that should be easy. Mm-hmm. Well, in 2010, as a 18-year-old kid, I was playing college football, and I was running down to make the tackle, and I see the opening, just a routine tackle, but I mistimed my jump just by a split second. And so instead of getting my head in front of the ball carrier, my head collides right with his legs. And instantly, I lose all feeling and movement from my neck down. And I was given a 3% chance to ever regain any feeling or movement back below the neck after suffering a severe spinal cord injury, which at the time I felt like my life was over. And eventually, it led to meeting Emily and then setting this goal that we're going to walk down the aisle for a wedding. And actually, the walk down the aisle ended up being the easiest part of our journey.
And your journey, you guys met 3 years after, right? And you went through some dark times, mm-hmm. as well. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So after college, I went through a dark time of depression and suffering with anxiety. And I've always had just a big passion and a heart for helping kids, kids who have been abused, neglected, without families, just had this big passion for kids in foster care and struggling with those things. So I always took that on my own shoulders and had this responsibility that it was my responsibility to help these kids. And instead of letting it out, I kept it in. And it really wore on me. I started not caring as much, stopped feeling, and just started losing me. Honestly, I thought I would never be me again. Like, I thought I was gone. Emily was gone forever. No hope. And I suffered for way longer than I should have because I was very against getting help. I felt like I had to do it myself.
Yeah.
Very independent. Felt like if I got help, that that was weakness and that.
It's crazy.
It is. Yeah.
When you change that one viewpoint, that it is a strength to ask for help, not weakness, everything changes in
100%.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Being able to just come to that realization that you have to ask for help. You have to depend on God. There's nothing wrong with that. And it does. It takes more strength to ask for help and admit like something's going on and it shouldn't be. But another thing that was holding me back from help was I didn't think that I could be depressed. Why would I be depressed? Never gone through anything difficult, right? So I didn't understand it at all. I understood that other people who went through hard things could get depressed. But for me, like I had this, there's no way, that doesn't make sense. So I just kept pushing through it and don't like being vulnerable. And so I shoved it all inside, all of the things that just create a disaster and so much more struggles than I should have been. And it lasted for a few years because of those views.
And where were you in that recovery when you two met online?
Yeah. So, I mean, so that was before any of this started. I was at a really good place when we met online, and it was actually right after the graduation walk that it really hit me. I had some signs before, but we stayed so busy with working hard and focusing on the graduation walk. But after the graduation walk and after it went viral, when everything was going so great, it just, I went down and I hit the bottom with where I was at.
Tell me about the graduation walk.
Yeah. So this was the first big goal of mine after my injury. I set the goal. I want to walk across the stage on my college graduation. Didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was going to work as hard as I possibly could each and every day. And I told Emily about this goal when we first met, and she was just as excited as this goal as I was. And she became my personal trainer, my best personal trainer that I've ever had. And we just worked relentlessly for this walk across the stage, which I thought in my mind, I got to walk as fast as I can so I don't get booed off the stage and people are like checking the clock. Like, it's hot in the gym. Like, graduations are long. And I'm like, oh man, I gotta book it across there. And so when we start going across the stage, this a roar of just cheering and clapping. And then I finally get across and I look out and the whole room, they're just, everyone's crying. I just couldn't believe the reaction, the response. And then eventually that video goes viral and it just takes.
People are still crying every time they see it.
Yeah.
I'm about crying with just hearing you saying it. Now, so you guys didn't just get through your own little struggles. You have taken 17. How old are you?
26.
26.
27.
27. You have had 17 foster kids and adopted five?
Yes, we have.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Five girls.
You really haven't recovered from hitting that guy's leg.
No, I haven't. Right. Maybe I had a brain injury too. Right.
17 and adopted five.
We have. Yeah, we love it. And I mean, when we first started, we're like, we'll take one kid. And God had a different plan and kept stretching us. And it is absolutely, it's become both of our passions. And we love just being able to help kids in these hard situations know they're loved. They're special. God has an amazing plan. And it takes a lot of work. There's a lot of hard moments, but when you can just stay there and show the kids they're not alone. So many of the struggles I went through helped me to know how to help the kids and to how to be there so that they don't feel alone. And when they're trying to push you away, to push back harder. But it's been absolutely amazing.
I have a 15-year-old son who I'm having a heck of a time with right now. And it's the hardest thing I've ever done is raise my son. And just no matter how hard he pushes back to be there.
Yeah.
That's one. And look at me. I'm 23. I mean, it's insane. How do you
how do you push through it with 17 and 5 now adopted?
Yeah.
Emily's like Wonder Woman without the cape. Like, she just, like, the more kids we get, the more energy she has. Like, I don't know how she does it, but I mean, I'll never forget the first time she's like, when we say, like, hey, one child, like, under the age of 2, and she's like, Chris, what about 2? I'm like, kids. I'm like, no way we can do 2 kids. That's insane. And then eventually we worked our way up to 7. But you just, like, when you take on more than what you think you can handle, that's when you can realize your potential. And so we just keep finding out that the more we take on, you just figure it out and you just do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say a big thing too is not taking it on your shoulders. What I learned when I went through the depression, like, I learned to depend on God and put everything on Him instead of keeping it on myself. Because you have to meet the kids where they are, but then to not let it bring you down, but instead, like, feel enough where you can still get into action and do every single thing you can every single day and let go of what's out of your control. There's so much out of your control. So just knowing and focusing on what we can do and letting the rest go has been very, very helpful to be able to do.
So I want to phrase this carefully. Have you guys failed in ways that you would have described as a failure 10 years ago and been able to walk away going, we did everything we could and that's a success?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that there's been moments where you feel like we would have previously felt like, you know, we're failing. But you just, when you do absolutely everything you can do and you focus on that and change your perspective to that, it really helps a lot to know. Because obviously some of the kids that we've had in our home have had a lot of behavioral problems and we've seen transformations, but then there's other times that you wish you could do more. You wish that you could change more.
Do you get to a point to where you're like, I don't know. I've done everything I know how. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. Yes. You get to that. Yeah. You get to that point. But what's kind of special too, when you stay after it and you stay persistent, like in that moment of like, nothing's working, like we're failing. And then it's like months later, the kid or the child will refer to something that you said months ago that you thought they weren't getting at all. Like, it, nothing that you were saying was registering. And then they apply something that you were trying to teach them months later. And you see little moments like that, that you can see the progress. Mm-hmm. And you just focus on that progress and just chipping away at it, because it's not an overnight thing. Like, it's not something that you snap your fingers and all the abuse and trauma that they experience and all the wiring that they've undergone is just gone. It takes a lot of time, a lot of moments.
I will tell you, I'm in my 50s, even though I look 22. And I, you don't need to laugh at that.
No, I just,
and I, or is it 72? And I still struggle for wisdom. And I'm listening to you two with such deep wisdom that really comes, you can't read wisdom in a book. You can read it in a book, but that's not where it comes from. It comes from you actually experiencing it. Do you think you would be anywhere close to who you are or where you are had it not been for your accident and your deep depression?
No, absolutely not. There's no way that I would be able to be a foster parent. We've heard the most unimaginable things with these kids and what they've gone through. And previously with how I was able to cope with that, I mean, honestly, it sent me into the depression and I couldn't handle it. And so now I know exactly how to handle it. I know how to let go of what's out of your control. And don't get me wrong, there are moments that I don't like anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's a battle. You just have to battle it. You have to fight it. And you just have to keep remembering that if you do what you can do as best as you know how and work every day, things do start changing and turning around.
Yeah. And now for me, like, if I could go back and change that play that paralyzed me, I wouldn't do it, because I found a life and a purpose worth living for. And I can see and use my pain for a purpose. And it gives me life and inspiration, knowing that my struggles can help somebody else through their own pain and struggles.
You two are remarkable. You're truly remarkable. And as a man who has hit lows and has been blessed by a good wife. You're a great woman, and you are greatly blessed. You're greatly blessed, and vice versa. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Vice versa.
She's way out of my league.
Yeah, I think good women usually are out of our league. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, and, thanks for having us.
How can we follow you? How can we follow your adventures?
Well, I know Instagram, Facebook, you know, we have our book coming out, The Seven Longest Yards, which shares our struggles and our journey. But, you know, Instagram, Chris A. Norton 16 is a great way to follow me. And that's my handle all across social media. ChrisNorton.org is my website.
Yeah. And then mine for Instagram and Facebook is Emily Summers Norton. And we do, we try to like, our life purpose is just to help people realize like you're not alone. Like everybody goes through hard things. So many people have looked at me and thought I have everything together. Like so many comments of you're perfect. There's nothing going on. And I hit everything. And you have no idea what someone else is going through. Chris, you see his challenges. He's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us struggles. Every single one of us hits those low points. And what it's about is just fighting to get out of it and knowing it's a strength to get help, like you said.
Everyone is in their own wheelchair. Just most of ours are invisible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and when I found this out when I was an alcoholic, I hid everything. I was very good functioning alcoholic. And I said things on the radio that I thought were going to destroy my career because I was done with radio. I'd done it for 20 years and I was done with it. It's back in the 90s. And I said the worst things about me because I was viewed as this, you know, clean cut kind of guy. And I was anything but. And I exposed who I was and what I was struggling with. And the opposite happened. I realized the more we're honest with each other, the more we tell, the more we realize I could disagree with you on everything, but we are exactly alike. We are exactly alike.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm privileged to people to see my challenges. People are kind and so helpful to me because they see what I'm going through. And
right.
I appreciate that, but we can do that to everyone.
Yeah.
And all the challenges that we're facing would be a better world.
Chris and Emily Norton, the Chris Norton Foundation, ChrisNorton.org, and the book is The Seven Longest Yards. You can pre-order now. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you for having
us. God bless. Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, God bless.
All right, let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor this half hour. It is CarShield. CarShield, if... you know, my grandfather used to work on his truck. My uncle used to work on his truck. My father was... as dumb as I am when it comes to mechanical things. So we didn't. We just looked at the car and went, oh, crap. You know how much that's going to cost? That's kind of where everybody is now because you can't work on your car. You have to take it in. And just one stupid chip can cost you thousands of dollars. If your car is out of warranty, you have 5,000, 150,000 miles on it, doesn't matter. I've got two trucks that I'm going to have until the doors fall off. They're, what, 10, 12 years old, 8 years old, the other one. And I just brought one of them in just for an oil change. $6,000 I was facing. I didn't even have to worry about it because they called CarShield. They knew I had CarShield and it was covered. And when I got there to pick it up, they were like, yeah, we had to do some extra things. It was $6,000. I'm like, what? Oh, it's all covered. CarShield covered it. That's the kind of warranty that you need. And they can give you that extended coverage now at CarShield. Go to CarShield.com. Use the promo code Beck or call 800-CAR-6000. 800-CAR-6000. Before you're facing a huge bill, go to CarShield.com. Use the promo code Beck. I personally can't believe we're still talking about the Mueller report, but we are. Bob Mueller is going to speak today at 11. That's Eastern time. We will be carrying that live stations, just so you know. He is. It's very interesting because it was announced and arranged by the Department of Justice. So this is not him saying, I want to hold a press conference. There will be no questions. He is just going to make a statement today, and again, we'll be carrying that live stations.
And it is the first time he said anything since the investigation really began.
And it's going to be quite interesting how he threads this needle, what he has to say. Coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, there is a lot going on today. Mark Cuban wants to change the Second Amendment. He says it's time to update it. That's fantastic. We have some news on Howard Stern that I personally find fascinating. I've read his new book and highly recommend it. And I find what he's going through fascinating. And his defense of those who have a conservative opinion is also fascinating. Democrats and their policies are getting more and more bizarre. And we finally, I think, can see over the horizon and tell you what's coming, not only with Europe, but also with China. The trade war is an actual war. And we'll talk about that in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
A little bit first about X chair. This is these chairs we have in the studios now. I started with one and I got one for my TV set and I just loved it. Changed all the chairs here in the studio and they're just the best. They are absolutely the best chair I've ever sat in. For an office chair at your home or at your office, I swear to you, I would sit in one of these and sit back like this and watch a movie and I'm fully comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a lazy boy.
It is. I mean, and you can actually get work done in it.
Yeah.
I feel like when you say lazy boy, it's like people you picture themselves falling asleep.
No.
No. It's a great chair, especially if you have like a home office. You got to invest in a great chair. Got to have one. You got to have one or you're just going to be miserable your whole life.
So here's the deal. X Chair is on sale now for $100 off. You just go to xchairbeck.com, xchairbeck.com. You need to feel the difference for yourself. If you don't agree with me, just send it back. 30-day guarantee, no questions asked. So it's not a problem. And I think, you know, a chair is very personal. It's like a bed. You have to know and you have to sit in it yourself. But I tell you, everybody who has sat in this, we're all different shapes and sizes. Everybody says the same thing. Wow, this is a comfortable chair. X Chair comes with a 30-day no questions asked guarantee of complete satisfaction. All you have to do is go to xchairbeck.com or call 844-4XCHAIR. That's 1-844-4XCHAIR. When you go there, use the promo code XWheels because they're going to give you a free set of the new XWheels with your chair, which is we don't even have the XWheels. They're better than these wheels, and these wheels are fantastic. But this is all new ball bearings, and this is just a remarkable chair. Xchairbeck.com. Go there now. Xchairbeck.com. Okay, there's a couple of things that we have to address. First of all, Mueller is actually going to be speaking in just under an hour. We're going to be carrying that live stations. So, you know, if it happens at the right at the top of the hour when everybody is in news, we will delay it until the 06 and begin right there. Just station note. But this is the first time that Mueller has spoken since the report has come out. And it's not something that he called. He may have been the impetus behind it. He might have been the one saying, hey, I want to say something. But it was called by the Justice Department. So this is not him going rogue on his own. This is through the Justice Department. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say. Any thoughts on that? We're bringing in Jason Buttrell, who can go into a couple of other topics that we're going to deal with here in a second. But bringing him in, also chief researcher of the program. Stu, any thoughts on what he's going to say?
I mean, it's a statement, no questions, which is significant. You'd think that if they were announcing it through the DOJ, it doesn't mean he's going to say, by the way, I forgot to put this piece of evidence, you know, this video of Donald Trump making out with Vladimir Putin in the report. Like, mm-hmm. You can't imagine it's going to be something like that. But he may just want to clarify. I mean, I know one of the big things, oddly, one of the biggest focuses of the aftermath of the Mueller report is this Barr letter, which I just don't understand the focus on it. I mean, you know, yeah, like we said at the time, I was on the air the day you were sick, Len, the day it was going on. And I remember saying, it's like, look, we all expect Barr to put the best face possible on this initial report. Mm-hmm. That's we can all act as if He's not going to do that. But if Eric Holder was releasing this report for Barack Obama, you're damn right. It would have been the most favorable way he could be accurate. And that's exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, when
I came back, I think it was back the next day, I came back and I said, don't put any stock into this. Let's wait for the full report.
Important to wait for the full report.
Right.
But what he said was accurate, but not he did not tell the entire story.
That's what a report does. A summary does not tell the whole story.
Exactly. And like the idea that this 3-week period in between when this one letter came out that did not tell the whole story, admittedly, but then he released the entire report and redacted almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if
he wasn't hiding it.
If he hadn't released anything else yet, I could understand this controversy. He's released the entire report.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've all been able to read it with the exception of very few things that were redacted.
And not because it was forced out, because he said he was going to release it. He just needed to make sure what was redacted needed to be redacted, and he was going to open it up as much as he could, and he said that in his letter.
Yeah.
I mean, so it wasn't like he was hiding anything. He knew the report was coming out the way he was going to release it.
But this is one of the big things that Mueller was apparently upset about. He wrote a letter to Barr saying, basically, hey, you need to release my summaries, or please release my summaries. Barr refused to do that, then did testify in front of Congress and said, I don't know, they probably wanted to release a little more after he'd released, you know, he'd already received the letter from Mueller saying we want to release more. Like he knew it. But again, like I don't think this is a huge controversy given the fact that we got the entire report like a couple weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And so my guess would be that Mueller is going to come out and say that he was probably wanted to get the full, the full details out there and would have preferred that to come out. And he wanted to get more information out of there. But again, we have it all already.
Yeah,
so this idea that
there?
This 3-week period, if you can't convince the American people that Donald Trump did something wrong with the full report, and your fallback option is essentially to say, well, we didn't like the idea that for 3 weeks people kind of believed it wasn't as bad as we think it was. I mean, that's just you're just a failure as a party. You've got another 18 months to make this case to the American people. And if you can't do it in 18 months, you're not going to win.
So what do you think of, I'm going to say two words here that will inflame people or have people celebrate. Those two words, Justin Amash. I think what Justin was saying, well, I know what he was saying last night at his 2-hour open forum in his district. I mean, the guy has balls of steel. And he was taking it from all sides, and he was taking it and being really cool. Let's be respectful. Let's talk this out. And what he was saying was not that he's for impeachment, but he has not signed on for impeachment. He is not saying, the Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, they're going the right way. What he's saying is that the president violated trust. And that is true. We all know it. We've just discounted it.
We've priced it in already.
Right. We know. Donald Trump in the 1980s. I'm the greatest. This is the most luxurious. We got it. He's a salesman. OK, we've known since the first time we saw Donald Trump, we're getting a hype story. So it's all been priced in.
He's admitted this in several books. And he says this is part of how you negotiate. It's a big piece of what he says all the time.
Right.
This is why you can't get so fired up like CNN constantly does or MSNBC constantly does about something he says or tweets or whatever. He's told us 1,000 times. It's between negotiation. It's about hype. I mean, he believes in those things and has lived his entire life based on those principles.
He
so
is P.T. Barnum, and I don't mean that because he wouldn't take that in a bad way. He knows
the greatest showman. Right?
He's the greatest showman. Yeah. So all of that has been priced in. What Justin Amash was saying last night was America has to have the conversation on a president violating the public's trust by being a showman, by saying, come on, Don. And there's nothing in the Mueller report that surprised me. I would have been absolutely heartbroken, maybe not surprised, if there was more, action happening with Russia. But I wouldn't have been surprised either with Hillary Clinton doing exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works now, unfortunately. Well, it wasn't what we thought it was. But it wasn't, it also, I mean, he was doing deals. We all knew he was doing deals with Russia. Of course he's trying to get Trump Tower in Moscow. Of course. He told us no. It was no business deal. Well, he defines business in a different way. That's all bull crap, and we all know it is. That's just the way he compartmentalizes stuff. What Justin was saying was, America needs to decide, is that okay? And impeachment is the only way to decide that. Now, we should have this conversation, but that doesn't mean that we impeach him. It means we have the conversation. I agree with that. I agree with it. We should have that conversation. We should be eyes wide open. Nobody should be so blind to, you know, Donald Trump to or Nancy Pelosi or anything to where you're like, no, I don't even want to talk about it. No, let's talk about it.
Yeah. And part of his point is there's a split in what impeachment means. Right. If you go back to the founders, you know, Alexander Hamilton was big on this and that, like, you know, it should be something that when there is you know, a misuse of the public trust, like, we should be going for this. Mm-hmm. And like that kind of concept is basically a lot of people get impeached, right? Like going down that road is we use impeachment more often. The founders looked at it as something that was utilized a little bit more often than we today, because now we look at it as this, like, oh my gosh, it only happens once every 100 years. It's an interesting split. Like, Alan Dershowitz has been on the program before and explained the other side of that, which is the bar should be incredibly high. And only if you have very clear violations, high crimes, really.
Not just lies.
Yeah,
high crimes.
But yeah,
and, not Clinton.
And to be fair, but Dershowitz was consistent on that point when Clinton was, Bill Clinton was getting impeached and saying, you shouldn't do this. It's not to the level.
Right.
This, you know, Republicans are, you know, did utilize, I would say, the thing that was closer to the founders during the Clinton administration. Many people argued for it during the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. That we don't necessarily have proof of crimes. However, he should be impeached. And that's kind of what, you know, the Democrats are trying to make an argument on. Now, we know they have no credibility on this point. But it is, I think, an important thing for the future of the country to figure out which one of those things we want. Do we want something? And I don't know. I mean, I kind of tend to lean a little bit more towards wanting that bar to be high, especially when we have 4-year terms. Like, you know, the idea that we're going to go to impeachment now when we're in the middle of a presidential campaign, it makes no sense to me.
No,
just vote the guy out if you think he sucks.
Yeah,
we're right around the corner. Mm-hmm. Amash's point on that is, well, we can't just say because we're close to an election, people can do whatever they want. The same rules apply when at the beginning of the term and then at the end of the term. And of course, he's right on that. I think as a pragmatic sort of functional thing, we've got 2,947 Democrats running for president. If you can't find one of them that you like more than this guy, he probably shouldn't be impeached. Right. Like, I mean, that's kind of a baseline, I think, real world view of this. But, you know, Amash is looking at this, I think, correctly constitutionally.
Yes.
And it is the way the founders looked at it. I mean, they outlined this in great detail in the Federalist Papers, saying, like, look, the issue here is when someone breaks the public trust, we have a way to hold them accountable. You know, we've been talking for a long time about how the DOJ basically has a rule. This is not a constitutional situation, but has a rule that you can't indict a sitting president. And so we accept that, I think.
Indictment is not a commitment. Indictment is, hey, we think you've done something.
Right.
We need to have a grand jury and look into criminal proceedings.
But you can't even go to that point as of now with a sitting president.
Right.
And so if you don't take impeachment to the more generalized view and saying, like, well, we can impeach you for, you know, hurting the public trust, you're essentially making the argument that the president is largely above the law.
Above the law.
Right? Like, he can do things that other citizens can't do. And while we kind of know that in reality, it's not something I want to admit.
It's not something I want to codify.
I don't want to make that the rule.
Yeah, I don't want to codify it.
So I think, like, you know, I think the concept of having impeachment as a threat to a politician who's entering into the presidency or any other position, where if they start violating the public trust constantly, they will be removed from office, is something that's really important. If we just say, well, if you murder someone, we'll remove you from office, well, That's not a real, it's almost a meaningless standard. Impeachment's not even a thing.
Here's the thing. Everything in life has a consequence. What President Trump did was be P.T. Barnum and skate around the truth and move it around. He didn't do any of the things that everybody said he was doing. Okay, he didn't do any of
Russia.
He did not collude with Russia. He did not take the information from Russia. He just didn't do any of the things that they were going after. He did, however, mislead us on his business dealings. But we knew that. That was baked in. If you didn't know that, you were an imbecile. Okay, so what we're talking about here is a consequence of the president betraying the public trust to some degree. Well, you know, is that a bad thing or a good thing or a neutral thing? That's something we should all decide. But the Democrats are going to pay a price as well for their action or inaction. If they don't act, they're going to piss off all of their really far left wing people. Mm-hmm. So they're going to pay a price for that. If they do and they do impeach, they'll pay a very high price for that as well, with the remaining people who are like, you know what? Can we just stop this nonsense? Let the system work itself out. Let it work itself out.
You just be a little quieter, Jason. We're trying to have a conversation here. Yeah. And sorry about that. We're going to come back with Jason here in a second.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk to you about, Jason. CarShield. CarShield, when your car says check engine, that's not a good thing. I mean, it's just not. I remember, you know, do you see the deal that 25% of Americans are worried about money all the time? 25% of our population is worried about money all of the time. Mm. If you're not in that situation now, you remember that situation most likely. And man, when that check engine light goes on, that is a full-fledged panic attack, because most people cannot handle a $500 repair. They don't have a $500 bump in the road that they can handle. So what do? May I suggest you have, you know, car insurance, you have health insurance. The health of your car is just as costly as the health of your body, and sometimes more expensive. CarShield.com will help you. If you're out of warranty, they have extended coverage now at 800-CAR-6000. 800-CAR-6000. I have this in my two used trucks, and I tell you, they have saved me a buttload of money. 800-CAR-6000. 800-CAR-6000. Use the promo code Beck and you're going to save 10%. So do it now. CarShield.com. 10 seconds, station ID. I will tell you that I don't like... We're at the point to where there are no good options anymore on so many fronts, because we let the horses out of the barn long ago. And so now we're sitting here and we're saying, how do we put Humpty Dumpty back together again? And if we don't start looking at principles and what's really going on, we're in deep trouble. One of the things we have to have an honest conversation about is the China trade war. As I've told you in the past, I don't agree with trade barriers. I don't like it. However, when it comes to China, I think the president is right, because of China 2025, which is a goal of China set back in the early 2000s, of being the dominant economic power and information power on Earth by 2025. This is something that we have not paid attention to at all. And our corporations have given them everything, because they saw that market and went, oh, we can make a lot of money. So business here for cheap goods, we all made this deal, went over to China. If Apple wasn't built in China, you would not be able to afford it. An Apple phone would be in the $2,000 to $2,500 range if it was made here in America. At the same time, these companies were so desperate for it, they gave China all of their technology. When you go over and do business, part of the deal is you have to teach us and show us everything, how you make it, everything. And so they're just gaining all of this technology for free because we've been so desperate. Between China 2025 and the new Silk Road and the Silk Road of information being the 5G network, China is warring with the West and the free world. They are at economic war with us, and we haven't had the balls to say anything. They're sending us poison dog food and bad medicine and opioids. They're doing, honestly, what the opium war was doing, what the English were doing to the Chinese. We'll talk about that with Jason, our head researcher, and what that means to us and what's happening over in Europe and what that says for the future, because there's a real change in the air over in Europe. And I think it shows that Donald Trump is on the right side of history, of at least the short-term history of where things are going. It could be promising for him in 2020. More in a second.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
So, Father's Day is coming up. And what are you going to get your dad? May I suggest, most of us love meat. Omaha Steaks is a great, great Father's Day present to be able to get everybody together. At least for me, I don't need anything. I just want experiences with my kids. That's all I want. I want to go someplace with my kids. I want to have a father-daughter date, or I just want to have a good meal with them. And Omaha Steaks is a great place to start. Right now, if you order, you'll get two tender filet mignons. You'll get top sirloins and pork chops, four Omaha steak burgers, jumbo Franks, chicken fried steaks, all beef meatballs, four chicken breasts, four caramel apple tartlets for dessert, a packet of Omaha Steak signature seasoning, and you get four extra steaks, steak burgers for free if you use the promo code BECK. Type that in the search bar at omahasteaks.com. Omahasteaks.com. Type BECK into the search bar and you're going to find this whole package perfect for Father's Day at omahasteaks.com.
The best conservative content all in one place, blazetv.com. You got Ali Suckey, John Miller, Lauren Chen, and of course, Glenn Beck. Go to blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn.
Jason Buttrill, who is with us now and our head researcher, I want to talk to you a little bit about Europe and China, but also a little bit about Mueller and what he's going to say here in about 30 minutes on this report. It seems to me, Jason, that this is nothing but a circus and a sideshow. Nobody's really honestly looking for the truth in anything, because the truth is Russia tried to meddle and did meddle with our elections, and they'll do it again. And nobody's talking about that. We're just talking about impeachment, which has no chance of going anywhere. The House can vote for impeachment. Good for them. Then it goes to the Senate. Do you think they're going to pick it up? No. And who's going to suffer at election time? The Republicans and Donald Trump, or the Democrats? The Democrats will pay the price for this.
Yeah, that's from a former member of the intelligence community. That's really the tragedy of this entire thing. Like, we know with what Russia did. It's very detailed, the report that they released on how they messed with our election, how they hacked major party organizations, DNC and everything.
Can you imagine what the NSA and CIA have on this? That we,
oh my gosh,
for the amount of stuff that we know at our level, and we were talking about 3-4 years ago, before any of this was in the public sphere, we found it on YouTube.
Yeah,
where they're admitting what they were going to do. Imagine what the federal government has, and they're not talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. That's really where the oversight should be right now. It shouldn't be talking about the stupid crap they're talking about now. It should be, wait a minute, like the House Intelligence Committee should be like, so are we identifying what went wrong, and have we hardened ourselves against this in the future? What about all the states? We have an election coming up in a mere matter of months.
Why are we not doing something? Hardening. Are we doing something?
What are we doing? When the president said the other day that we had to go to Mars because space was the most important defense thing we could do right now, I disagree. Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing we can do is harden our intelligence network and our information network and our election network. We are prime for hacking. And if we are hacked, we end up being in the worst shape because we are the first world country. When something doesn't work, when we don't have electricity, when we don't have power, when we don't even have air conditioning, we go to hell fast. China doesn't go to hell that fast because their people are already living a lot like the Stone Age.
Yeah. Yeah. We are in a new nuclear, like, basically arms race.
Yes,
right now. This is the new, like, before it was actual nuclear weapons. Right now, it's different types of tech. You mentioned China, 5G rollouts. That is crucial right now, and China's destroying us in that. AI right now. There should be a Manhattan Project for artificial intelligence scientists all over the world.
Been saying that for years.
That should be the immigration center right now.
Last week, Samsung released this Mona Lisa project. Did you guys see this? We talked about it last night.
Yeah.
So making the Mona Lisa move and talk. Okay. It's a painting. Making it come to life and speak. And they can do it with any picture. That most people didn't realize that was announced at Samsung AI Moscow.
Wow.
Okay. That's significant. That's deep fake territory. That's deep fake central. And we're not talking about it.
Yeah. Russia actually has a hacking convention every year where they invite all the best hackers and computer scientists into like one central location. I think it's in St. Petersburg. And they give them a task. The tasks are all military. This is frightening. Have you ever heard about this?
No.
They give them a task that's specific to attacking another nation state. So they'll be like, there's a power plant. You have 30 minutes to break into it. What do you do? Or you have 30 minutes to crash it and make it explode.
We're not doing any of that. I at least that I know of. I hope we are. But I don't think we're doing any of that.
Well, we did find out that the NSA did have this tool that's now kind of biting us because it was leaked. But they had a tool that could break into basically every Microsoft computer for several years and never reported it to Microsoft because they liked using it.
Of course.
And once it leaked and now other countries were using it against us, they did go to Microsoft. It's been patched now. But these whatever computer isn't patched can still be hit by it. Point being, though, they got a lot of tools. I mean, the NSA has a lot of tools.
I know, and I hope we do. I hope we are. I mean, we're in the Sputnik time period now for technology, and whoever gets to the moon first dominates. And I hope to God that it's us. China is not screwing around now, and I think. Jason, I think we have gotten this China thing right from the beginning.
Yep.
We have said it's about 5G. It's about hacking into our businesses and our inventions here. It's about our companies giving away their intellectual property for free to China. It's about unfair practices that China is doing, and China 2025. This is a serious issue.
And this is a transformative economy that we're about to see. We talk about how there's been going to be massive shifts. They're moving away from, you know, creating small, like little stupid little products, you know, that they used to sell off to us, and we still buy via Amazon. That takes about 2 months for them to actually get here to go through customs. But they're moving away from that. But the entire world is really moving away from that. It's going more towards services. Remember, like, Apple now is like, they're like, crud, we're not making as much money on phones anymore. Now they're looking at opening up, like, you know, like Apple TV, doing stuff like that, other services. Mm-hmm. It's moving in tech services. That's the direction. And China saw this coming from a lot. Why do you think they're trying to expand their 5G network all over the world? Because they want to be the ones dominating that. So do you want the country to dominate the flow of information all over the world? This is what this is really about. The flow of information all over the world. This is the same country that is doing a social credit system amongst their citizens. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest police state in the world right now. They're jailing their own citizens.
It's the biggest slave state in the world right now.
Right.
It is. It's an abomination. It is. This is the situation that in 100 years from now, our great-grandchildren will all say, you know what? Our great-grandfathers and grandmothers, they were just awful people. They didn't care about the slaves in China. They did nothing about it. We're dealing exactly with the same kind of things that our founders were dealing with, and they looked at business and said, well, it'll work itself out. Let's just go to war when we have to. Let's do these things that we have to do, and it'll work itself out. It will work itself out, and I think with China, it's going to work itself out with war.
Yeah, you can't look at company, like I've heard a lot of people say, look, it's they're just tech companies in China and they're competing. You cannot look at tech companies in China versus the same as like tech companies in the rest of the world, especially not here in the United States. Let's take, for instance, Huawei. So Huawei, we delivered a huge blow to Huawei. They're leading the push on 5G right now. The Trump administration just said, look, any U.S. company cannot do business with Huawei, which is a huge deal for Huawei because their phones, which is probably the number two largest phone company in the world now. They all use Google. So now they can't use Google anymore. So they're like, oh, crud, what do we do? They're also making a push to lead in like laptop and computer production. Now they can't use Microsoft. So now they're kind of screwed. Now, the history of Huawei is pretty interesting. And this kind of goes into how these Chinese companies operate. The only reason Huawei is a thing right now is because they stole the source code from U.S. companies that moved into China right after, you know, their introduction into the World Trade Organization. They stole the source code, then copied whatever all the other how to build certain phones and stuff from U.S. companies. Then they created a clone company of U.S. companies. That person, their CEO, was a former intelligence guy in the China People's Republic of China military. His job was to procure technology. That was his entire job. Then he becomes the CEO. He was also a Communist Party member. Now, this is the guy that stole the source code, now has the second largest phone company in the world. If you're a flagship company in China, there is an official Communist Party office located right next to the CEO's office, basically. They're co-located with the company. Huawei is China, Chinese government. The CCP, the China...
Chinese Communist Party.
That's them. All their flagship companies are the same way. So if you're looking at, well, this is just Huawei trying to like, you know, dominate 5G. No, it's the Chinese Communist Party in China.
It's China 2025, which was a communist goal set out in 2006, somewhere in that area, of where China would be at China 2025. In the year 2025, we are going to dominate the world and the world's information. And Donald Trump is putting a stop to it with this trade war. It's the only thing that makes sense because of the moves we're making. It's the only thing that makes sense because people like Larry Kudlow Stephen Moore, are for this. And when I've talked to Stephen Moore, he has said China's different. And he's right. China is different.
This is you. I flip-flopped, as you know, probably, Stu, on this multiple times, because I just don't know. Like, I am against tariffs as well.
Yeah.
But when you think about China, it's a different animal. Like, I don't know. How else are you going? What other lever are you going
to
pull?
You have to stop them taking all of our stuff.
It's interesting, though. I mean, why is the answer to them stealing our technology a tax on us? Why do we have to pay the penalty for the transfer of technology to them? Because that seems like something they're doing wrong. It's not something that I'm doing wrong. Yet I'm the one who has to pay all the higher prices.
Right, but I don't think you can stop this with the American corporations, because they want that. They'll sell their country out. We know that. Facebook, Google, they'll sell us out in a heartbeat. They don't care. And they're already working with China on really bad things. Mm-hmm. So for the country to say, we have a trade war, and oh, by the way, you cannot do business with this company, that's the next level. This level is, oh, Apple, you want to do that? Okay, go ahead. It's going to cost you 25% more. And so they do pass it on to us. But I think hitting these corporations where they live on the bottom line is the only way you're going to get them to untangle from China.
The Huawei situation seems to be a more direct way of addressing this, though, right? I mean, like, they're going after them because they've committed what we view as, you know, international crimes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, almost acts of war. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. it's really mm-hmm. serious. But like to add, because of those types of things, to add a 20-25% tax that I have to pay on goods from many times companies completely unrelated to them is a very indirect, broad, blunt force thing that punishes American citizens for crimes that China commits.
So here's what I think actually happened. Larry Kudlow, Stephen Moore, and John Bolton, they all know. They all know what China really is. Does Donald Trump know what China really is? I don't know.
I think he knows they're a serious threat.
He knows they're a serious threat. Is he the architect of this? No. I think what he's the architect of is a trade war. He loves tariffs. Mm-hmm. And so the people in the administration that he surrounded himself with said, okay, you know what? There's some good that we can make happen out of these tariffs. Because nobody's been willing to take them on. He'll take them on under the guise of mm-hmm. tariffs. So let's solve the Huawei stuff. Let's solve some of these things by using tariffs. I think it was their way in using something that Donald Trump understands how to use and really loves.
Yeah, I think they're making the best of a situation.
I think so too.
They don't prefer.
Right.
Larry Kudlow is very friendly to free trade economics.
Correct.
It's been that way for a long time. But the people he has, like Wilbur Ross and Lighthizer, and I mean, these people are not. They're the exact opposite. I mean, they want to do this whether China is good or bad, which is why you saw, you know, tons of our allies getting hit with these big tariffs as well. This is not just a China situation. It's a broad strategy by the president, but which, by the way, he ran on. I mean, it was a big, you know, big priority of his.
What were some of the things that we were told off air by people who were very pro-Trump during the election? Glenn, I want you to know, I got several calls like this from people. I am not for Trump. I just want you to know I am with you 100% away, but I am not going down the road you're going down because somebody has to be in his inner circle because we have to be able to use the things that he believes in and his bully pulpit and move us in the right direction. And with that, not in a usurping sort of way. Exactly what Larry Kudlow said. He talked to the president and was like, no, I'm not. I wouldn't join you because you're for trade war. Then he said something to him for 20 minutes. And Larry was like, I'm in. What could that have been? Larry, this is what I want. What do you want? Well, I think China is a danger. Good. Do those things. I want this done. Yeah. I want a better deal with China. You want to hurt China in this way and get that done. I think we can do both. To me, that's what would make somebody like Larry Kudlow go, sure, I'm on board with your trade war. Mm-hmm. Sponsor this half hour is LifeLock. Consumer advocates are raising alert about a Social Security imposter scam. Scammers use technology to spoof your caller ID, making it look like they're calling from the Social Security Administration. Hi, Mr. Beck?
Yeah?
Social Security Administration. You can see it there on your caller ID. Somebody's stolen your Social Security number, and we just want to track it down. Can we verify your number, please?
Sure.
You going to read it back to me? No, we'd prefer that you read it to us.
Don't do it.
People are using this to steal your identity and your Social Security number and then sell it on the dark web. Cyber criminals are doing everything they can, and you're not able to follow all of it, but LifeLock can. LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck. LifeLock.com. Promo code Beck. Secure your identity with LifeLock.com. Promo code Beck. Look. Here's the thing. We're against trade barriers. We are against economic sanctions. We're just, when it comes to trade, free trade is the answer. This is just getting ugly, and we have to pray that the president and those around him are looking at the effects of these trade wars and looking at the election that is coming. Do nothing. Do no harm to the economy if you want to win 2020.
You're listening to Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bob Mueller is speaking for the first time publicly since the release of the Russia report. He's expected to announce that he is going back to private life, but is he going to say anything else? about what people are saying about the report and Attorney General Barr. It's something that has been called by the Justice Department. So this, he's at the Justice Department making this statement. There will be no questions that he'll be fielding afterwards. But we'll hear his speech in 1 minute. Stand by.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Right now is the time to get a new home because interest rates are extremely low right now, making a new mortgage payment affordable. Please get a locked-in mortgage rate. Do not do an adjustable mortgage. Please, you'll pay for that later. Right now, you can lock in a mortgage rate, and you will save so much money. In many cases, you will pay less for your home than you do for a rental, and rent is going to go through the roof, I believe, in the next few years. Anyway, American Financing. These are the people that you can trust with your mortgage. They work for you. They don't take kickbacks from the banks. They're not trying to jam you into somebody's mortgage. They're looking for the right deal for your conditions. Call them now. Just take a 10-minute visit on the phone and get started with AmericanFinancing.net. Call 800-906-2440. 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
All right, let's go right to Robert Mueller, who is talking about...
good morning, everyone, and
who knows?
Thank you for being here. 2 years ago, the acting attorney general asked me to serve as special counsel, and he created the special counsel's office. The appointment order directed the office to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. This included investigating any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign. Now, I have not spoken publicly during our investigation. I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the special counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life.
It's not a surprise, by the way.
I'll make a few remarks about the results of our work. But beyond these few remarks, it is important that the office's written work speak for itself. Let me begin where the appointment order begins, and that is interference in the 2016 presidential election. As alleged by the grand jury in an indictment, Russian intelligence officers, who were part of the Russian military, launched a concerted attack on our political system. The indictment alleges that they used sophisticated cyber techniques to hack into computers and networks used by the Clinton campaign. They stole private information and then released that information through fake online and identities and through the organization WikiLeaks. The releases were designed and timed to interfere with our election and to damage a presidential candidate. And at the same time, as the grand jury alleged in a separate indictment, a private Russian entity engaged in a social media operation where Russian citizens posed as Americans in order to influence an election. These indictments contain allegations, and we are not commenting on the guilt or the innocence of any specific defendant. Every defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. The indictments allege, and the other activities in our report describe, efforts to interfere in our political system. They needed to be investigated and understood. And that is among the reasons why the Department of Justice established our office. That is also a reason we investigated efforts to obstruct the investigation. The matters we investigated were of paramount importance. It was critical for us to obtain full and accurate information from every person we questioned. When a subject of an investigation obstructs that investigation or lies to investigators, it strikes at the core of their government's effort to find the truth and hold wrongdoers accountable. Let me say a word about the report. The report has
two parts, addressing the two main issues we were asked to investigate. The first volume of the report details numerous efforts emanating from Russia to influence the election. This volume includes a discussion of the Trump campaign's response to this activity, as well as our conclusion that there was insufficient evidence to charge a broader conspiracy. And in the second volume, the report describes the results and analysis of our obstruction of justice investigation involving the president. The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the volume two of our report explains that decision. It explains that under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office. That is unconstitutional. Even if the charge is kept under seal and hidden from public view, that too is prohibited. The special counsel's office is part of the Department of Justice, and by regulation, it was bound by that department policy. Charging the president with a crime was therefore not an option we could consider. The department's written opinion explaining the policy makes several important points that further informed our handling of the obstruction investigation. Those points are summarized in our report, and I will describe two of them for you. First, the opinion explicitly permits the investigation of a sitting president because it is important to preserve evidence while memories are fresh and documents available. Among other things, that evidence could be used if there were co-conspirators who could be charged now. And second, the opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing. And beyond department policy, we were guided by principles of fairness. It would be unfair to potentially accuse somebody of a crime when there can be no court resolution of the actual charge. So that was Justice Department policy. Those were the principles under which we operated. And from them, we concluded that we would not reach a determination one way or the other about whether the president committed a crime. That is the office's final position. And we will not comment on any other conclusions or hypotheticals about the president. We conducted an independent criminal investigation and reported the results to the Attorney General, as required by department regulations. The Attorney General then concluded that it was appropriate to provide our report to Congress and to the American people. At one point in time, I requested that certain portions of the report be released. The Attorney General preferred to make the entire report public all at once, and we appreciate that the Attorney General made the report largely public, and I certainly do not question the Attorney General's good faith in that decision. Mm. Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I am making that decision myself. No one has told me whether I can or should testify or speak further about this matter. There has been discussion about an appearance before Congress. Any testimony from this office would not go beyond our report. It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made. We chose those words carefully, and the work speaks for itself. And the report is my testimony. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress. In addition, access to our underlying work product is being decided in a process that does not involve our office. So beyond what I've said here today and what is contained in our written work, I do not believe it is appropriate for me to speak further about the investigation or to comment on the actions of the Justice Department or Congress. And it's for that reason I will not be taking questions today as well. Now, before I step away, I want to thank the attorneys, the FBI agents, the analysts, the professional staff who helped us conduct this investigation in a fair and independent manner. Mm. These individuals, who spent nearly 2 years with the special counsel's office, were of the highest integrity. And I will close by reiterating the central allegation of our indictments, that there were multiple systematic efforts to interfere in our election. And that allegation deserves the attention of every American. Thank you. Thank you for being here today.
All right. He said a lot there, and we're going to give you the analysis in 1 minute. Stand by. First, let me tell you about Relief Factor. If you're in constant pain, you are not alone. I have been in pain for a long time, and you get to a point where you're just like, I can't take it anymore. When you get to that edge, you're willing to try anything. And I honestly did not think Relief Factor would work. And it's a bias of mine that it's 100% natural. Please. Let me eat a plant. And so I just didn't think it would work. I take it 3 times a day, and it has really worked miracles for me. Get your life back. Get out of pain. Try it for 3 weeks. Their quick start costs you $20. If it doesn't work in 3 weeks, it's not going to work for you. So try it. 70% of the people who try it go on to order month after month like I do, because it does work. ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. 10-second station ID. So I think that he said some really interesting things. Let me just recap here quickly. WikiLeaks tried to influence. Russia tried to influence. They timed the releases and hacked into things and released it to influence our election. Private businesses in Russia also tried to influence. They did interfere. However, we also looked into obstruction, because anybody who is trying to obstruct us looking into, were our elections free and fair, we needed to look into. So if there was an accusation, we looked into it. He says part one of his report was about the numerous attempts that did happen by Russia, but there was insufficient evidence to prove a crime when it came to the president or anyone around the president. He said, if we would have known for sure that the president did not commit a crime, we would have said so. Now, he didn't say if he did commit a crime, we would have said so, because what followed, I thought, was really interesting. He said it would be inappropriate, and it would be a process beyond justice if we accused and no court could try. So he said it would be wrong and unjust if we made an accusation that, yeah, we think this guy committed a crime, but no court could try it because he's the president of the United States and it's unconstitutional, he said, to charge a president with a crime, a sitting president. So he said we couldn't charge him with a crime if we found a crime. Now, he didn't say they found a crime, but he also said that they didn't find him innocent of any crime. So you're kind of left in this middle ground. And what he's saying here is there's another judge and jury. And that judge and jury is the American people through the impeachment process, because we can't go through the Justice Department. We did what we were supposed to do. And I have nothing further to say on this. There's nothing that we're hiding. There's nothing that the AG has held back. He endorsed Bob Barr, saying he thought he was fair. I do not question Bob Barr. And he said, my testimony, any testimony from anybody on my team, including me, will not go further than the report that is already public. So you're kind of left with, well, wait, you didn't find anything. But you're kind of saying that if there was something, we wouldn't have said we should. It's a crime because it's unjust to accuse him of a crime. So was there a crime?
Mm. Yeah, because I think what the media is going to take out of that section, which I think was one of the most important sections, is him saying, look, we were prevented from charging him. However, you do have a way to follow up on this.
Yes.
And the media is going to translate that as him basically giving a roadmap to what Congress should do next, which is impeachment. That is how I think people are going to take that in the media and on the left.
But my question is, you impeach him. You just had a grand jury. And so, you know, when a grand jury does an investigation and they do all of this, you issue an indictment. This person committed a crime because of these things. Well, he's just said there's no other information for us to give. We've given you all information. Mm-hmm. Well, we've all read that information with an exception of just a few tidbits that don't seem like they're bombshells, okay, hidden behind those black bars. They're just names to protect.
A lot of Roger Stone stuff, basically.
Correct, okay? So he's sending two signals. One, there is a way, if you think the president committed a crime, you have to do it through impeachment. But two, if you're going to interview any of us on the team, we're all going to say the same thing. Everything we have is in that report. Well, there is this weird line in there of if he had committed a crime, we couldn't have said anything. And if we knew he didn't commit a crime, what did he say in the report? If he
was innocent, we would have said so.
We would have said so. Right.
Basically, if we could have proved his innocence, we would have said so.
But like you said, on the other hand, if he would have been guilty, we wouldn't have said so.
Right.
So it kind of helps nobody.
It helps nobody
and it certainly doesn't help Trump.
Because if we have all of the information, well, then where is the crime?
Right.
What is the crime?
Right. What they're saying is there's a way to take this, right? And I think the left will take it this way. Certainly the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world will take it this way, which is saying he can't say that there's a crime that has been committed. However, he believes there is a crime that has been committed and you should go and impeach him for it because that's the only way he can be punished for that crime.
Yeah, but what is the crime?
Well, he's saying it's all there. This is a crime.
Where? Again, did you see it? You read the report.
And to be clear, I'm not saying this, but I'm saying that the left will be making this argument, which is there are a lot of examples of things that we could say were obstruction of justice. You know, him asking for Mueller to be fired and not. Well, I mean,
I know. You can look at it that way.
But in reality,
there's no smoking gun. This is something that you know, I read it. If this is all the information, which he just said, we have no other information. It's all out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's all out there. Yep. Okay, well, it's all out there. Well, I don't see anything that is a smoking gun. You could look at certain things and go, yeah, that was not good. And that probably was maybe that skirts. But there's no smoking gun on anything. And so what you're doing now is saying, we couldn't prosecute and bring to a court of law, but I honestly don't see, even if you could, we've all now seen all of the information.
Right.
And I wouldn't, if I'm an attorney general, I'm not bringing that to a courtroom.
No.
Even if constitutionally I could, I don't think you have a strong enough case. You know, beyond a reasonable doubt, no way.
Democrats won't mind that, though.
No.
They'll do it anyway. Because of their sheer hatred for him.
But I think they will pay a heavier price for it.
It's possible. I mean, maybe. I think there's a good argument to be made, though, on the other side, is what Mueller is basically saying with his press conference is, look, I did my job. I got nothing else for you. Leave me alone.
Yeah, he is
saying
that.
You see what's sitting there. If you think it's enough, go for impeachment. But stop bugging me.
Yeah,
I think that's exactly a fair reading of where he is.
And that's probably why he did this press conference today.
Right.
I will say the Barr thing was like maybe the biggest moment in there because Mueller saying that he believes Barr was acting in good faith with what he did with the letter is a huge part of the story, because the main point of evidence that the Democrats had against against Barr was to say that Mueller wrote this letter. And he said, I want you to release more, and you're not doing this. And they tried to make it out like Mueller was really pissed off. As you see in that press conference, Mueller is telling you he's not pissed off about
quote,
it.
Quote, right. I do not question Bob Barr.
That's big.
That's huge.
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 The problem is, after 2 years, we want something definitive.
Yeah.
Give us definitive, and we just don't have it.
And we have definitive on
the collusion.
On collusion.
Yes.
And we have
that would have been the crime.
Right. And we have definitive on Russia and WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Yep.
We have all this evidence. There's no evidence. There's just this, like, well, maybe, I don't know. I guess you could read it that way. But you don't put people in jail for that. And you don't take away the presidency for that. There's no smoking gun. As he said, everything that we had to say and we found is out. You know it all.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
That's not the way. Yeah, that's not the way the press is going to treat it. They're going to go the opposite way. All right. Let me tell you a little bit about selling your home. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, moving into an area that you don't know, it's awful. It's awful. You have no idea. You need somebody that you can trust, that understands you, has your sensibilities. The real estate agents that we have in realestateagentsitrust.com are all people who we have hand vetted. We know them personally. They listen to the show. They have your same sensibilities. They look for honest deals. They're kind of handshake kind of people. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. When you're in the car and you're saying, look, you know what I'm worried about with schools. They do know what you're worried about with schools, and they will help you find the right place. If you're looking to sell your house, they know your area and know how to find the right customer for your home and price it right and get it off the market. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, a free service from Mercury Real Estate. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. It's really interesting to sit here and have multiple screens to be able to watch all of the news channels and how everybody's reporting on this. Fox News has rotated through several different banners. One they generally are on is there was insufficient evidence to charge broader conspiracy. But they have gone through several different things that Mueller said. Not having the sound up on either of them because we're in the studio, you kind of just have to get the gist from what, you know, each is saying by what they're putting up on the screen. Fox News seems to be reporting a more positive, but a more thorough look at what Mueller said. The only banner that I have seen on CNN is this. Mueller, quote, if we had confidence the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so, end quote. So that's what the media is going to hang their hat on. And that was in the Mueller report.
Right. It's just a quote from the Mueller report, which is the same quote that they used constantly right after it came out.
Right. So the conversation is not going to change, but it should. And here's what it should change to. And I want to have an adult, nonpartisan, constitutional conversation. And that is, here's, if we looked at this as history and we said, all right, you've read the Mueller report on Harry Truman, and we take Trump and Obama and everybody else out of it, and we're talking about Harry Truman. This is what the report said, and this is what the opposition and the supporters were saying. Dismiss opposition and dismiss supporters right now as just noise. Look just at the report and what he just said. Well, what he just said was there's nothing hinky going on in the Justice Department. There's no cover up, and nobody's telling me or anybody else what to say. The attorney general is on the up and up. He's a good man. I trust him. I want to get this exactly right. I do not question Bob Barr. That's huge.
Huge.
It's huge that he said everything that was supposed to be released has been released. you have all of the information. Nobody's telling me to say these things. Nobody's telling me what not to say. I'm telling you now, you can have us testify, but there's nothing else I'm going to say. My testimony is that report. I have nothing else. Everything I wanted to say is in it. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, again, if we were just talking about Harry Truman, what this report does is it does say that one line, if we had confidence the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. But he also came out and he said, if we would have charged him with a crime, it would have been unjust because we can't charge a sitting president with a crime. There are other ways to deal with that because he's the president, but the court of law and charging someone with a crime that they can never go to court and clear their name of, meaning there's a chance he's innocent, right? And he deserves his day in court. So we can't say that he committed a crime because he cannot have a day in court. So that leads you to understand that there is something in the report and all of it is out. So we can have an adult conversation. That won't happen on TV, but we can have an adult conversation. Wait a minute. Let's go back and look at that report, because if memory serves me correctly, there are a couple of places where they said we investigated this and there was no crime. We investigated this and there was no crime. We investigated this and we also investigated this. And then we investigated this and there was no crime. Wait a minute. What were those last two?
Yeah.
Okay. But there is no smoking gun, or the media would have been all over it already. There is no more information than what is in this report. So we already know. We have to go back and look at it. Now, those smoking guns, is the media will say, well, we got something. And the Democrats are going to say, well, he was saying we should impeach. No, he's saying, if you find that there is enough to charge him with a high crime or misdemeanor, all of the evidence, there is nothing else, all of it is in that report. So you're not going to find anything else. If you find a smoking gun, well, then you should impeach. Well, if there was a smoking gun in that report, wouldn't we have already been talking about it? What they've been talking about lately is something that he is denying, that Bob Barr is shutting down this investigation, that he was, in a way, obstructing justice, that he was lying about what Mueller was saying. Well, Mueller is saying no. So they've played their strongest card from the Mueller report, and that was, there's more to it. Well, Mueller has just come out and said, I want you to know, no one's telling me anything. In fact, I trust the attorney general, and I think he's acted honorably. There is nothing else. There is nothing else. So what we have to do as adults is go back and look back at the Mueller report. And what were those couple, two or three places where they didn't say there was not a crime there?
Probably the biggest one is the attempt by the president to try to get Don McGahn, the attorney, to deny that the president had ordered him to have Mueller fired. Okay, so Trump calls McGahn and says, fire Bob Mueller. And McGahn says no. Then the story leaks that that's happening, and Trump goes back to McGahn and says, release a statement saying that I didn't tell you to fire him. Okay, and that is essentially the accusation to prevent further scrutiny. He wanted McGahn to lie to the press about this. So,
but the president came out when he fired Mueller, or when he fired, what's his name?
Comey?
Yeah, Comey. That was the first time. Mm-hmm. And he came out and said, yeah, I fired him because of this. When he's doing this with Mueller and trying to fire Mueller, he clearly can. He, just like Comey, he's the president.
That
guy works for the president. It looks bad, but he can.
There is part of this that is, you can't always fire people to protect yourself. I mean, there is precedent for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at this, the way the Mueller report is broken down, if you haven't read it, and I hope You have enough of a life to not have read it.
You let us do that.
Yeah. They have basically 10 things in there that they think could have been obstruction of justice. And each one has to hit, it has to clear all three hurdles.
Right.
Here are the hurdles. It has to be an obstructive act. Uh-huh. Okay. They have to do something, obviously. Number two, it can't just be an obstructive act. Number two, it also has to have a nexus to an official proceeding. So basically, it has to do with an, it can't just be like a, you know, something with the press. It has to have something to do with an official court proceeding. You're trying to get in the way of the investigation in some way. And then third is intent. Your intent has to be to hide, to actually obstruct. It can't just be something that wound up obstructing, but you didn't mean it to. Okay?
So in this particular case, it's very easy to see Donald Trump as a guy, and we all know this, if you are against Donald Trump, he hates your guts and he wants you dead. Okay. Whether he did something or not, whether it's justified or not, he doesn't want you around. Okay. And so you can easily see him saying, I am so sick of this Mueller stuff. Just fire the guy. I want you to fire him. His intent may not have been to obstruct justice.
Right.
It was, I'm sick of this guy.
And that's what's interesting about this particular incident, because they have, throughout this, they go through all 10 and they apply those three standards to each one of the accusations.
Mm-hmm.
In almost all of them, one of the hurdles they basically tell you is not cleared. Like, he didn't have the intent, or it didn't have a nexus to an official court proceeding, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's always one of them, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, on all of these, they found something on one of the three standards, but they couldn't get all three. And to make it official, to make it a real charge, they need to get all three of those things. This McGahn one, they basically tell you they have all three. They basically go through this and say, yes, we do think there was an obstructive act. Yes, there was tied to an official court proceeding. Yes, he had the intent to try to hide it. Like, and they, and you know, it's a little bit more nuanced than this. They present some evidence on his behalf as well. Like, for example, one, and again, this, if you remember the definition of is,
mm-hmm.
right? Trump's case is not that he said he was going to fire him. He said he wanted to get rid of him. Now, those are two different, I mean, they seem to say the same type of thing, but there's a little more wiggle room in the get rid of him. What does that mean exactly? How does that work? Is there a conditional part to that? But I mean, that's one of his defenses here is basically, I never said the word fire. I never said the word fire. That's why it was an obstruction to get McGahn to come out and say I didn't say it, because I said get rid of it. So I'm not trying to mislead people by saying I never called McGahn. I tried to call McGahn to say, come out with a statement that said I never said fire, because I didn't say fire. I said get rid of him. And so, like, that's a type of line, and they present that as a case, as a part of the argument in his positive. However, they also give evidence on the other side of that as well.
Well, so, it's a definition of is.
It's a bit of a wording game, but they are saying that, okay, well, here's what he says, and maybe you believe that. Here's why we don't necessarily believe it.
Right. But this is something that is, in my opinion, is in the gray area mm-hmm. of definition of is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's not something that conservatives have typically wanted.
No, I'm
as
not
the
saying.
Standard.
No, wait, wait. Right. I'm not taking a side on mm-hmm. either side. I'm just saying, if you're going to impeach somebody, you want clear cut. You yep. want clear cut.
That's a standard I think is appropriate.
Correct. And mm-hmm. it could be a smallish crime, but you want it clear cut. He did this because of this. The problem with this is they looked at all of these places where he could have obstructed and he didn't.
In a lot of them.
Right. So there's no real pattern of obstruction. There is just his solar flare of, I want this guy out of here.
It seems to be there were some moments of anger, sometimes connected to an official act, which, you know, doesn't excuse you for what you do in that situation. I think it's a good argument for Trump as a person, because when he has these moments of anger, and sometimes he flies off the handle. But generally speaking, in here, you see a lot of opportunities for him to do more where he stops it. I mean, I've made this example before with Jared Kushner. They would not give the press a thing on the documents that they wanted about this. But behind the scenes, he was telling Kushner, whatever they want, just give it to him. Like, I mean, so he gives this front to the papers and to the press of, I'm not going to give you anything. He's fighting with them. But in the background, behind the scenes, he's telling Jared Kushner, give investigators whatever they want. Like, that's not a sign of someone who's constantly trying to obstruct justice. And it's he may have had moments where he flew off the handle, and that's what they're going after.
The biggest point in this favor, in my opinion, is there's no underlying crime. Okay? Like, there was no obstruction, or there was no collusion with Russia. There wasn't. Mm-hmm. He wasn't doing what we hoped that he wasn't doing, at least if you're an American, and you put America first, you hope the president wasn't colluding to disrupt our elections.
That would be bad.
Okay, that would be bad. Mm-hmm. If any of that would have come through, I would not be on the presidential bandwagon. You were colluding with a foreign entity, an enemy of ours, to destroy our elections. You're done. I don't care who you are. You're done. There was none of that. None of that. So he's obstructing justice for what reason? So they don't get down to there is no evidence of things?
I think a lot of times it's just him fighting with the press.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. He thinks that this, and he has good reason to, that this is a setup, that the press is just coming after him. I think if you look at this as Harry Truman, I think that's where history would have ended up if this would have happened to Harry Truman. No, he was... There wasn't an original crime. And so, yeah, they say that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. No, not really. Not with him, because he wasn't covering things up. He was giving information to the investigators. Give them whatever they want. So he was saying, we're not doing anything. But he had these moments where he's like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a fair reading of it.
I think that's a totally fair reading of it. Uh-huh. And the American people are fair. The press isn't. The Democrats will not be. And let's be honest, if this were Barack Obama, our side probably wouldn't be honest either, and give him the benefit of the doubt. They're going to do what he has to do. Just keep doing what you're supposed to do. And the one thing the president needs to do is pay attention to the economy. Make sure this economy does not stumble or fall, because that will decide the election. Our sponsor is ComeSailAway.com. ComeSailAway.com, this is going to be so fun. This is happening next spring, and you know, they've been asking me to do this forever, and I've not wanted to do it because I'm not a cruise guy. And they said, okay, well, what would you want to do of a cruise? So I want to go to Europe. I want to see Athens. I want to take my daughter to Athens. I want to go to Venice. I also want to go back to the Holy Land. I want to be able to teach my kids the history of the Enlightenment. That's Venice. The history of the Enlightenment and how these really strong people funded the Enlightenment. What a democracy is, why we're not a democracy, why are we a republic in Athens, and what is the foundation of our religion, of our belief of freedom that comes from the Holy Land. So I've heard David Barton, Bill O'Reilly, we're all going on his cruise. I want you to check it out. Please come with us next spring. All inclusive. ComeSailAway.com. That's ComeSailAway.com. Oh, Lord, forgive us and heal our land and heal our people, please, because you're the only ones going to save us. Because every decision we face, every option that is out there is just not easy or good. Protect us, Lord, protect us.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.